The following Dharma talk was recorded in January 2015 near Kansas City, Missouri. It is one of three recordings from the annual New Year's retreat taught by Robert Brummett. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Robert Brummett has practiced insight meditation since 1988 and conducted retreats since 1995. He received a Vipassana facilitator training from Shinzen Young and graduated from the Spirit Rock Community Dharma Leader Program in 2000. Robert is one of the founding members of Mid-America Dharma. He lives in Kansas City and teaches at Unity Institute and Seminary near Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Many years ago, when I was in my early 20s, I was on a spiritual search. I was shopping for a religion, having left the Catholic religion of my youth and childhood. I was a strident agnostic for a number of years, but that got kind of dry and lifeless, so I thought there must be something available. So I got a textbook on world religions and started reading. And Buddhism had always fascinated me, though I didn't know anything about it. So I started reading, and I got about halfway through the first page, and I encountered a sentence that says, Buddhism teaches that life is suffering. So I then shut the book and said, thank you, I've heard enough. After 20 years in the Catholic Church, I did not need another religion that said I was doomed to suffering. So a couple of weeks later, I thought, well, let me give it a second chance. I shouldn't judge Buddhism quite so hard. So I read another page or two, and then I came to a sentence that says, Buddhism teaches that there is no self. Well, that was a deal breaker. I just shut the book and said, maybe we'll look for Confucianism or Sufism or something else, but Buddhism was out of the question, you know. Not only are you doomed to suffer, but you're a nobody. That was my interpretation. And of course, there was a misinterpretation. And in retrospect, I can see that even the author of the book did not have a real clear understanding of what Buddhism was about. And as I've mentioned or alluded to before, the term life is suffering is perhaps a mistranslation of the word, the Sanskrit word dukkha, which could also be translated as unsatisfying or unsatisfactory. In the First Noble Truth, that life is suffering, or life is dukkha, probably more correctly, basically is saying that there's nothing in the world of time and space that's capable of truly satisfying us. Nothing that we can see, hear, touch, taste, or smell can permanently satisfy us. Things, we may be temporarily satisfied, we may be partially satisfied, but nothing in this physical, mental, emotional dimension can give us what we're really looking for. And then, as I came to understand the term no self, I came to realize that the Buddha himself apparently never said there was no self. He basically taught that we should, quote, cling to nothing as the self, which is not quite the same thing as saying there is no self. Cling to nothing as self. Sometimes that phrase is used as a summary of the teachings or the core of the teachings of the Buddha. So if we were to ask the Buddha, well, is there a self? Do I have a self? My guess is he would say, take a look. See if you can find it. Let's look for the self, because that's what this practice is about, direct experience. So if I go in search of the self, what do I discover? Well, I can start with my body sensations. This sure feels like me. But I realize these body sensations are constantly changing. The body is constantly changing. This is not the same body I had 50 or 60 years ago, or even 20 years ago. And yet it still feels like the same me, quote-unquote me. And the very fact that I am aware of the body means there must be more to me than just the body. There must be something beyond the body to be aware of the body, right? Well, maybe I'm the mind. That's what most people would say in our culture today. Yeah, you're not your body, you're your mind. Well, we've just spent a day and a half looking at the mind, seeing changing thoughts, changing emotions, changing mind states. It's possible to be aware of the mind and the activity of the mind and the contents of the mind. Well, what is it that's aware of the mind? If I'm aware of my thoughts, then I must be more than my thoughts. Well, what am I then? So I keep looking, and everything I look for is not self, or at least not all of me. Maybe it's a part of me. The body is a part of me, perhaps, for now. The mind is a part of me, perhaps, for now. My possessions, my relationships may be part of me for a very short time. What is it that is the me? Well, there is no answer to that question other than the inquiry itself. Who am I? Who am I? If we pay attention, we see that what we call self consists of two things. It consists of a subject, which is aware, and it consists of an object, things that it's aware of. So I am aware of body sensations. Who am I? Well, I am the awareness. And it seems like I'm the body sensations. I am aware of the mind. Who am I? Well, I am that which is aware of the mind, and I am the contents of the mind. So I see that there's a part of me that doesn't change, and that's that which is aware. There's a part of me that's can be known. I can understand every sensation in my body. I can explore the mind. I can explore all the contents of the biography of this self, this being called Robert. But there's one thing I could never discover. It's a little bit like going into a dark room with a flashlight. Just imagine you go into an attic, let's say, that you haven't been into for many years, and it's full of old family heirlooms and everything. So you're up in this attic with a flashlight, just looking around, looking at everything. And if you're patient enough, you can see everything in that room, except for one thing. What is it that you'll never see? The flashlight, right? The flashlight cannot shine light on itself. So the question, who am I, is really can only be partially answered. I can tell you who I am. I can understand who I am in a physical, temporal way, in terms of the body and the mind, the relationships and the activities, etc., etc. But that's temporary and changing. The only thing that doesn't seem to be changing is that which cannot be known. The flashlight. The knower. Alan Watts used to say, to try to discover who you are is like trying to bite your own teeth. Okay? We can't bite our own teeth. The knower cannot be known. And yet if we ask ourselves, how do I function in this world without an identification, we find that it's necessary and it's appropriate that we define who we are in a certain way, even though that definition is just a convenience. So yeah, this is who I am. This is Robert, this body, this name, this mind. It's a convenient representation of this thing that cannot be described or explained. The self doesn't exist as a thing. The self does not exist as a finite entity. So as to say there's no self doesn't mean you don't exist. But it means that your existence cannot be contained in an object or a shape or a concept or a form. If I were to ask you, what is a river? You could take me down to a river, say the Missouri River, say that's a river. Thank you. Come back the next day. Is that the same river that we were looking at yesterday? Is it? Trick question, of course. It's not the same river, because the river is constantly changing. In fact, there's no such thing as a river in terms of a thing. A river is not a thing, is it? You say, there's the river. Where? Right there. No, it's not the same river I was pointing to earlier. It's gone. So, the Greek philosopher Heraclitus says, we never step in the same river twice. We can never see the same river twice. We're never the same self any two moments in a row. Because this temporal self, the relative self, is constantly changing. And yet we can name a river out of convenience. I can talk about the Missouri River and you have a general idea of what I'm talking about. But it's not the same river that was there yesterday. Not the same water. Not even the same shape. Even the shape is constantly changing. Yet we call it the Missouri River. I remember a few years ago doing some classes at a former church where I was minister at Unity Church in Overland Park. And someone says, were you the minister of this church? I said, well, I was. But it had a different name, different location, different people. But it's the same church. I thought, well, what makes it the same church? It's just like the river. There's just this sense of continuity that we give a name to something. It's interesting how we name storms, hurricanes. You see, a hurricane is not a thing. It's constantly changing. We're not even sure when to call it a hurricane. But there's a point where we give it a name, you say. And that name takes on a reality in our minds, not an absolute reality. But you know, if I say the name Katrina, you know, most people don't think of a woman, they think of a storm, right? So maybe it's only when something's potentially destructive that we give it a name. I don't know if that's the criteria or not. But everything is constantly changing. There's a quote here from Don Juan, who was Carlos Castaneda's teacher, if you're familiar with any of that work. Don Juan, the medicine man, says, "We are luminous beings. We are perceivers. We are in awareness. We are not objects. We have no solidity. We are boundless. The world of objects and solidity is a way of making our passage on earth convenient. It is only a description that was created to help us. We, or rather our reasons, forget that the description is only a description. And thus we entrap the totality of ourselves in a vicious circle from which we rarely emerge in a lifetime. We are perceivers. The world that we perceive, though, is an illusion. It was created by a description that was told to us since the moment we were born." It's interesting that modern physics is very much agreeing with that, so it would seem. That the more the physicists try to pin down the ultimate nature of reality, the more ghost-like and ephemeral it becomes. And some would say reality is simply information. It's simply what we know about what we call reality. It's the description that we give to it. There's one school of quantum physics that even says that nothing exists until we perceive it. That perceiving and creating is the same thing. So where is yourself before you perceive it? 10 minutes before your alarm goes off in the morning, what is your sense of self? Where did it go? And then the alarm goes off, and bam, appears the self, the world. Poof. All at once. Where did it come from? And then 16 hours later, it all disappears again. And maybe we have some dreams and a whole new self arises. A whole new strange world appears. And then the alarm rings and that world disappears and a different world appears and a different self appears. So who am I? What is this? Of course, we say, well, this is the real world, and the dream world is just a fantasy, and this is reality. Many schools of mysticism say what we call reality is as much a dream as what we call a dream is. That there's a reality more fundamentally real than the difference between dreaming and waking as we know it. the Taoist teacher, Chang Tzu, writes, one night, I dreamt that I was a great butterfly. I was a great butterfly that had wings that spanned the entire length of the universe. And I could feel myself moving every molecule in the universe as I flapped my wings. And then I woke up and discovered that I was Chang Tzu lying on the bed. And then I wondered, am I Chang Tzu dreaming that I'm a butterfly? Or am I a butterfly dreaming that I'm Chang Tzu? So this whole idea of self is quite fascinating and quite fun if we don't take it too seriously. If we can recognize that self is a product of our conditioning, our biological conditioning, I mean, much of our sense of self is based upon our biology, upon the way the brain functions. Much of our sense of self is based upon our culture, our language shapes our sense of self to a large degree. So this sense of self is all we know at this moment. But it's very interesting to live in the question, who or what am I? It's not a question that has an answer, by the way. As someone once said, no, don't ruin a good question with an answer. Because the really important questions can't be answered. You ever notice when you ask a question and somebody says, that's a good question, what are they really saying? I don't have an answer for that question, right? So the really, really good questions are unanswerable. They're unanswerable in the same dimension from which the question is asked. They're answerable, but only from a different paradigm. So the questions are important. The problem is we try to answer the questions from the same mind that formulates. We try to come up with an answer from the same mind that formulated the question. So it is possible to know who you are. It's impossible to describe who you are. And so it's like the taste of the strawberry. Once we've experienced it, once we've tasted it, once we've tasted what's real, once we've touched the fundamental ground of our being, we know it. And everything changes. And yet, in a sense, nothing changes. The context in which we live shifts radically. The content of what we do may or may not shift at all. It's very interesting when the so-called Copernican Revolution took place, when the human race shifted its fundamental paradigm from the Earth being the center of the universe. You know, in the sun, the moon, the stars all revolve around it. And Copernicus formulated the theory, and Galileo provided the telescope to basically prove it empirically, that there's another way to see things. That the Earth isn't the center of the universe, that maybe the sun is. And yet, maybe the sun itself isn't the center of the universe. Maybe the galaxy is. Maybe the galaxy itself isn't the center of the universe. And on we go. When we shifted our perspective, and everything changed, and yet nothing changed. We still live the same way. We still act as if the Earth is flat, the center of the universe. Sure looks that way, doesn't it? So is there a self? Is there really a self? Well, let me ask a question. Does the sun rise in the east and set in the west? Yes or no? Yes, it does. But it doesn't. Right? It doesn't both. Of course, the answer to that question is it depends upon your perspective. From the point of view of us living on this planet, yeah, the sun does rise in the east, sets in the west. But if we had the perspective of being in outer space looking at the Earth, we wouldn't see the sun rising and setting. It's the turning of the Earth that gives the illusion of the sun rising and setting. Yet for all practical purposes, the sun might as well rise in the east and set in the west, right? I mean, to you and me, it doesn't matter. Us earthbound creatures, doesn't make a bit of difference. And yet there's another part of us that is in awe of the fact that this universe is much bigger than it appears to be. So yes, there's a self, and no, there's no self. Depends on your perspective. How big is the frame of your picture? Sometimes I'll hear someone say, well, it's obvious that there's a self. I mean, in our culture in particular, the self is the supreme god of the universe, right? I mean, me.com. I mean, it's all about me, isn't it? Everything is all about me. I am the center of the universe. And in our culture, too, the sanctity of the individual and the rights of the individual. I mean, our form of government is based upon this idea of the value and the importance and the reality of the individual. You know, this government, this nation isn't just a conglomerate of robots serving it, as in a totalitarian regime. The government exists, or at least on paper, it exists for the people. Government is there to serve the people. So yeah, our culture says, by all means, there's a self. How can you possibly deny that there's a self? And so I answer that question with another question. Since the question can't be answered, the question can be questioned, I'll say. So the question is, are you sitting still right now? Okay, I'd like you to sit real still. You're not sitting still. Why aren't you sitting still? Because you're moving around the center of the earth at 1,000 miles an hour. The earth is moving around the sun 60,000 miles an hour. The sun is moving around the center of the galaxy 500,000 miles per hour. We are not sitting still by any stretch. Does it feel like you're moving 60,000 miles an hour? It sure doesn't. Because our whole frame of reference is this earth. The earth is it. It's flat to us. It's solid. It's the foundation of everything. I mean, it's hard for us to imagine there's people on the other side of the earth that are living upside down. And yet, we live that as part of the reality in our modern era, our postmodern era in particular, that things are not as they seem. I mean, in a very scientific way, we know that. Seeing is not believing. That the truth is not obvious. The truth is much stranger. So from that same perspective, is there a self? Well, as far as I'm concerned, there is. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sitting still, and the sun will rise in the east in the morning. Yet there's a part of me that knows that that's a very limited perspective. That may be the framework in which I, you know, go to the bank and go to the grocery store and live my life in so many ways. And yet somehow knowing that this is not all there is changes everything. It gives life, gives my life, an entirely different context. So the going to the grocery store and going to the bank are done in a very different way than if I thought that this is all there was, you see. In some Buddhist traditions, they talk about the teaching of two truths. You might call it the absolute truth and the relative truth. And it's not so much that there's two different truths, but there's two different perspectives of truth. Such as, are you sitting still? Well, there's two answers to that question. One is yes, and the other one is no. So, does the sun rise in the east and set in the west? The answer is yes, and the answer is no. Is there a self? The answer is yes, and the answer is no. So from a pragmatic point of view, from the point of view of practice, what can be very helpful is to be aware of the sense of self. Be aware of having a self, and being aware, typically only in retrospect, of not having a self. You know, if you're reading a book and you're lost in the book, you're the story. There's no self. We're a movie. Where's the sense of self? It's embedded in the story, right? It's in the movie. The self is the movie. The self is the book. Then somebody taps you on the shoulder. Hey, can you do something for me? Boom. All of a sudden the self comes back. You see? One can be sitting in meditation. There's no self. All of a sudden somebody calls our name. Boom. the self comes back. So being aware of the self appearing and disappearing, seeing that self is actually not a noun but a verb. The self is like a fist. If you look the word fist up in the dictionary, it'll say the fist is a noun. It's a thing, right? This fist is a thing. You can see it. It's an object, right? I'll do a little magic trick. I made it disappear. So, where did the fist go? It's a thing, right? But it disappeared. See? Well, a fist is not a thing. A fist is an activity. The fist is simply the hand squeezing itself closed. The fist disappears when the hand is no longer squeezing itself closed. Consider self as an activity, as a verb, rather than as a noun. Think of yourself as a river, rather than as a rock. Notice the flow of that river. Watch the self. And pay close attention to the relationship between the awareness of the self and the awareness of suffering. That can be very, very instructive. I'd like you to think about a time when you felt very peaceful, very blissful, just very happy. And then if I would ask you, at that time, what was your sense of self like? Were you aware of a sense of self? If so, it was probably a very thin, light sense of self. In fact, one of our greatest joys is losing the self. And that's why people skydive and do all sorts of things, you know? When we have an orgasm, we lose our sense of self. The ultimate bliss. I disappear into the other. Okay. When we're dancing, when we're singing, when we're doing art, when we're doing anything ecstatic, what happens? Where goes the self? It's gone, isn't it? And what arises when the self disappears? Pure ecstasy. Pure ecstasy. And conversely, I invite you to think about those times when you were suffering a great deal. Physically, emotionally. What was your sense of self like then? I bet it was pretty thick, pretty hard, pretty solid, you know? Have you ever felt really self-conscious? It's painful, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the idea of not having a self is not bad news at all. It's really very good news. But it's so ironic that we fight it to the death, quite literally. There are many, many, many people that will die rather than let go of the fist, the sense of self, the grip on who one is. So that's the great paradox, is that the thing that scares us the most, which is losing the self, is what we really want the most. It's what gives us the greatest sense of joy, ecstasy, freedom. And yet it scares the hell out of us. So we're often like the moth in the flame. The moth is attracted by the light, but it can get so close, and the heat scares it away. The moth loves the flame, but it's terrified of the flame, because the flame will consume it. And yet it can't leave that flame. So what does it do? It orbits. It circles. Perhaps lifetime after lifetime, huh? It circles. So just moment by moment, throughout the day, during your walking practice, during your eating practice, during your sitting practice, just notice what's the sense of self that exists right now. You know, we can be a meditating self. We can be a good yogi self. Or we can be a bad yogi self. I'll never get this right, you see. There's all sorts of ways that we self. You know, bad self, good self, getting better self. No self, yeah, I'm no self. I'm so proud of my no self. That's quite a fascinating process, so enjoy the ride. Yeah.